Welcome to Unpacking Life's Crazy. I'm Esperanza Phoenix. In this podcast, I share my unusual life experiences, unique perspective, and frank conversations with people like me who use humor to cope with physical disabilities, mental health conditions, and extraordinary life circumstances which set us apart from societal norms. Expect to hear discussions about controversial and adult topics. There will be swearing. Life can be a crazy journey. Let's unpack it together. It's June, and as most of my listeners already know, June is Pride Month. The very first episode of Unpacking Life's Crazy was an interview with my daughter Kira, who happens to be transgender. And since then, we have made it an annual event. This is the first Pride Month that Kira will not be joining us. She is dealing with some things in her life right now, and frankly, all of the anti-trans sentiments and legislation has been really hard on her, and she didn't feel up to an interview. I put the call out to my other friends in the LGBTQ community, and I am grateful to Lennon Lang for agreeing to join me for an interview. Lennon is a 43-year-old musician, video game producer, and mother of four. She has three sons, ages 11, 13, and 24, and is mother to 22-year-old Dream, who is non-binary. Lennon came out as transgender 5 years ago, which is also about the time she met Melanie, the love of her life, who identifies as genderqueer. They currently live together in Sacramento. Lennon is a multi-talented musician. She plays guitar, bass, ukulele, piano, and drums, and she sings. Lennon has a passion for puppetry and was diagnosed with schizophrenia in her 20s. So, like me, she also struggles with her mental health. I am so very pleased to have Lennon Lang here for our Pride Month podcast. So, let's unpack this. Lennon?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, you are very welcome. I appreciate you joining me for the Pride Month podcast. And as I mentioned, you are transgender.
Yes.
I want to say for the audience, as I often, when my daughter is on here, we discuss this as well. If I ask you any questions which you are uncomfortable with, you are welcome to just say pass. And for those listening, if she passes on something, I'm going to cut the whole question because I want to make sure that you aren't wondering why she didn't answer. So just so that she's comfortable, because these are questions that you should not be asking a transgender person or someone who maybe their gender is ambiguous to you and you don't know. These are questions that would be considered rude if you don't have permission to ask them. So I just want to be clear about that. And Lennon has told me that would you say you're an open book?
I am so very much an open book, so there probably won't need to be any editing.
Okay. But just to be clear, and just because I want the audience to really know that some of the things that I would like to discuss are more about the legislation that's going on, which is one of the things that my daughter, she's been kind of burying her head in the sand about, because it's very stressful.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah. And for anybody who's paying attention, it's been a rough time for the transgender community and the LGBTQ community. Recently, there's been a lot of crimes and a lot of legislation that's scary. So.
Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I mean, definitely it's a scary time. It's weird because it's both a scary time and a great time to be transgender. It's so more out in the open. nowadays where you see it publicly and it's not just hidden behind walls. But with that comes a lot of people that don't really agree with it. And that's why we have so much legislation going on that is trying to kind of push us back into the closet.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think a lot of it is fear based on change. And some of it too, I remember, I think it was a psychology class where they were talking about how some people are kind of wired to stay in the same place and not accept change. They want everything to stay status quo, whatever the status quo is. Mm-hmm. And as I've said, some of these people, they might be neck deep in shit and they won't try to climb out because that's the shit that they know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they don't know what's on the other side of that. So those people, there's something about their primitive brain that resists any kind of change. And
yeah, I mean, I get that. But at the same time, I just see that the outcry of how much it's hurting people.
Oh, 100%.
It's been so loud that for them to just still be like, well, I just, it's not my thing, or... It's like you're damaging
fine.
People.
It can be not your thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But you keep that to yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What you do in your own house behind closed doors is your thing. And, you know, what someone like yourself does in your own home, that is your own thing. And, mm-hmm. And these same people who argue about gun rights want to take other rights from other people.
Exactly.
And that's not acceptable. I mean, frankly, I'm not fond of religion. I don't agree with their lifestyle. And I wish they wouldn't force it on their children.
I totally agree with you.
And that, my friends, is a lifestyle choice. Whereas people in the LGBT community, that is how they're born.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I didn't really have an option. I mean, for me, it was just, well, I mean, for me, it was just so different just because in my day, it was pretty much, there was two different types of way you would see a trans person. It would be comedy, or it would be an example of someone that's just low down and dirty, just a street person. And those were my two examples. So me growing up, I never even realized that I could just be a normal trans person and that just be okay. So it was erased from my mind even that I had the opportunity to transition, because to me it was either a joke, which I wasn't, or some scumbag, and it's like I'm not that either, so I guess I just have to be confused for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and that leads me right into this. So you came out as trans, you said, about 5 years ago.
Yep, at 38.
And honestly, you are the oldest person, transgender person that I have spoken with about that. I mean, mm-hmm. I've come into contact with, but not somebody who I, like I said, these are not questions. You just,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I observe that you're transgender and that's fine with me, but I'm, you know. So most of the transgender people I know are younger, mm-hmm. like my daughter, who have come out, you know, in their time, it's been more acceptable with their peers. It's been more acceptable in society. It's, like you said, it's a different time.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point do you think you started suspecting that you were transgender? Was there an aha moment? Were you kind of living in the shadows and then you suddenly went, okay, the tide is shifting? I mean, how did that work for you?
It's been a long journey for me. I always wished, ever since I can remember, the main thing I wished is I wanted to be a mother. As long as I can remember, I've wanted to be a mother. And I never understood.
And that was never, it was never that you wanted to be a father. You specifically felt that you wanted to be a mom.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I actually named my daughter Dream just because I've always dreamed about having a little girl. So that's where their name came from. But
I'm going to divert for just a moment.
Okay.
You are a mother now.
Yes.
How did your children come into your life?
Well, I was the father.
Okay, so that was my curiosity.
Yeah.
So were you married previously?
I've been married two different times. So I got married at 19, just after coming off the streets homeless. I got married and started a family, had a kid at 19.
And we're going to come back to that, too.
Yeah.
Sorry to interrupt. Let's come back to that. Okay, keep going.
But, yeah, so I got married at a young age, ended up having problems after about 8 years, and then split up. She actually passed away from a heart attack, so I've been raising my kids by myself. Until I met my last wife, who was very, very, very abusive. So it was a 10-year abusive relationship. That's what kind of led me to... I had given up on happiness. So I had kind of just figured that I was just going to be in a loveless marriage. And this is just how it was going to be. This is going to be my life. And there was trans stuff coming in the media, even with people who I hate, like Caitlyn Jenner. But still, they were so big in the media that it really pointed a target on, like, hey, normal rich people that could be transgender. It was after a suicide attempt that I was in the hospital, and I just realized that for the first time that I could think about myself for once. Because I never had thought about myself. I've always put my kids first ever since I was 19 and have had them. And, I mean... That's at 19 now that I know that's just a child.
Well, you know, that's what good moms do. It took me till mine were older to get the therapy I needed as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I just kind of decided to go for it. And like, I've always wanted to be a woman. And I kind of was like, everybody else is doing it. Like they can do it. It's happening and I'm seeing it.
So what's stopping you?
Yeah, so it was actually the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve of 2018. Wow. I turned to my wife and was just like, I'm transgender and I'm transitioning. I'm going to just go for it.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was not met with happiness.
Oh, well, you already said that your wife was abusive.
Yeah, so it was to be expected.
Yeah.
But yeah, she really took a lot of anger out on me. But my kids... It was like a light switch that you just flip it and they were just like, okay, you're mom now. Yeah, me and my
kids. Well,
that's
wonderful.
Yeah. I have.
And that must have been a big relief too, because I imagine you must have had some sort of misgivings or trepidation or just not knowing.
Yeah, I mean,
what your kids would feel.
It was scary, especially my youngest, because he was the most like just still at an age where he wasn't fully aware of the inner workings of life. And so he didn't understand, and it was hard to explain to him. But for the most part, he was just kind of like, oh, okay. And it was like, literally no big deal. And then my daughter, who is non-binary, was like, great, we're all part of the same group. Yeah.
So she had already had her realization that she was non-binary at that point.
Yes, yeah. But they were always a lesbian. My daughters ever since they were little, the only boy that they ever found attractive was some cartoon character. And I was like,
Yeah, there was a time with my daughter Kira where, her sister and I, we kind of wondered if possibly she was gay, but we didn't know. There were some things there where we're like, we're not sure how this is going, but you know, that's their journey.
Yeah.
Wait, and
it's funny you mentioned like thinking that they might be gay, because that was a big part of my journey. Is I always felt so feminine that I just assumed from everything I saw in the media and everything that was around me that meant I was gay. And so I tried to be gay for many years of my life. I tried to be with men and tried to embrace that culture because I was like, I have to be.
Right.
And it turns out I'm not gay. Well, I actually am. I'm kind of a lesbian. So.
Yeah, and I think, just for the audience, I think some of them find that a bit confusing because my daughter is also, she's transgender. She's transgender and a lesbian. So she's yeah. attracted to women, but she feels like a woman. So I think that kind of throws some people. They don't know quite what to do with that.
It does, yeah. And that's just where education is more important. And the reason that I like to do podcasts and any talks that I ever have the chance to do is just because it's just awareness. The more and more we have awareness, the more and more people have access to hearing other people's stories, especially stories of triumph. I ended up being pretty successful. So it's very nice that I can tell people about my hard life and everything that I've struggled through, but it ended up, or and not ended yet, but thankfully.
It's going along well.
It's going along really well. Yeah.
Yeah. It's moving in the right direction.
Yes.
One of the things I like to mention this situation is that I think a lot of cisgendered people don't quite understand is the spectrum of sexuality.
Yes. Yeah.
And that it can be a wide spectrum. Thanks to my older daughter, I realized, oh, well, I guess technically I am bisexual because I have some attraction to some women. I haven't really acted on that. I'm in a committed relationship with my boyfriend, and that's fine. But there is that spectrum of attraction, and some people are attracted to people of one sex or the other. Some people are attracted to both. Some people are simply attracted to people, and their gender or what gender they feel like or what they got going on downstairs is completely irrelevant. So there's a wide variety of that out there. And more people are becoming accepting of that.
Yeah.
But culturally speaking, and with a lot of religions, there's a lot of bigotry against that.
Yes, there's definitely a lot. I mean, it all goes back to education as well. You want to educate both the people that are in the closet and wishing they had a voice, as well as the people that have a very loud voice, but it's a negative one, just because right. a lot of them don't understand. I was in a small town when I first transitioned, and no one knew how to handle it. It was handled very poorly by every single person around me.
And I believe that was the same small town I grew up in.
Yes, it was.
But before we started recording, we were trying, okay, how do we know each other? And I'm sure we've crossed paths several times being in such a small community. Yep. And we shared the same wonderful therapist, so yay. But yeah, very small town, very closed-minded. Some parts of California are much more open-minded yes. than that particular town. And did you grow up there?
No, I grew up in the Bay Area. So I was always in the Bay Area, and then I lived in Sonora for 10 years because of a job.
Worth that.
No, it's, yeah. It just was weird, like, especially being a parent, like, as a trans parent, going to, like, my daughter's high school get-togethers and their celebrations and everything. The dirty looks that you would just get from parents, like, it really just showed me how much, and I see this every day, just how much transgender people are hated by a large portion of the world. And it's sad because
it is.
It's such a non-thing. Like, for me, I'm a woman and it's not even a thing. It's like I'm just living a life. That is literally all I'm doing.
Just a person being you.
Yeah. It instills so much hate in some people, which is just weird. Because I'm not a hateful person. I don't hate anybody. I don't have the energy to hate people.
I've talked about this in probably another interview with my daughter. I think I am fortunate to have grown up in the Native American culture. Because a lot of Native American tribes actually have words for yes. non-gender or both gender or trans, you know, that gender flexibility, that gender neutrality, that whatever was a part of the culture of this continent.
Yep. And celebrated. It's not just part of the culture. It was,
yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. They were the shamans. They were the ones who people went to for advice and thought maybe they have a better idea of what's going on than somebody who's one gender or the other, because they probably do.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know. I think for me, I really noticed a wealth of knowledge come from me when I transitioned, just because I all of a sudden saw the life, the world through the perspective of a female's eyes and was being treated differently. I saw exactly how the switch is from when I was presenting male till when I presented female. There was a constant shift from so many people, especially professionally, that changed drastically. And it's just really interesting. I found it fascinating just to see how, well, it makes me go to anybody that says like there's no women wage gap. It's BS, because the way I got treated, like just right immediately, wow, by my boss, it was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Even a boss that you had before you transitioned, mm-hmm, or wow.
Yeah. She actually said in a meeting, I just don't trust women.
She said that.
She said that. Yeah.
Wow. Talk about self-hate.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, exactly.
And there is, I mean, we know this as a fact too, but also I suspect that a lot of hate for the LGBTQ community and transgender people is self-hate.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Because there's something in them that that they can't accept, that they reject because of the voices in their head from parents, religious leaders, people in the community, who knows, mm-hmm, high school jocks that they went to school with. Those voices have shaped how they see themselves. So that little part of them that, like you finally recognize that and accepted it. Instead of accepting it in them, they're rejecting it in everybody else.
Yeah. And I think a big problem with that, it goes back to religion. I think that is a big poison that we have in the world. I find that most of the bad interactions I have with human beings is from a very religious perspective, which is just hilarious because of the preaching, like, love thy neighbor and everything, but shit on everybody behind their back.
And I like to point out, as a lifelong pagan, I mean, I claim to be atheist, but as I said, I was raised in the Native American culture and I don't believe in absolutely nothing. I mm-hmm. have a certain respect for nature, but it is Same. Not necessarily a religion. It's a belief system. It's a cultural thing. It's not... we are following a set of rules other than, you know, basic kindness and like don't shit on the earth. Well,
yeah,
you got to poop somewhere, but you know what I mean? You know, respect the earth, respect the creatures on it. You know, don't pollute your, you know, there's some basic
exactly.
principles there. But the people who use religion as a tool for hate, I feel don't even truly understand the book that they claim their hate comes from.
Yes.
Because it is my understanding that Jesus has never in their book said anything against transgender people or gay people
yep.
or prostitutes or lepers or drug users yeah, or exactly. any of those things that a lot of people like to use the Bible as an excuse to discriminate or hate on these people. And I haven't seen evidence of Jesus ever having preached those things in their book. So it seems like they like to blame their religion for the things they already want to discriminate yes. against or want to hate.
Yeah, exactly. It's all an excuse just to be a horrible person.
And, you know, it really should be just live and let live, because...
Well, that's the weird thing is, like, so many people that I know that are atheists or just against, basically, anti-religion, they're some of the most loving people and so caring and do things for everybody else. I mean, it's just really quality people. And I think it's because they're choosing themselves to be good. They're not basing it off of a book saying, I should do this, I should do that. They're saying, I'm choosing to do this. And they're actually choosing the right choices.
Right. And I've seen this quote before. I'm not even sure who from or where, but it talks about religious people saying, well, you know, of course we need religion. You know, what else would keep you from stealing and raping and murdering people? It's like, oh my God, yeah. If a book is the only thing keeping you from doing those things, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
Because that says to me that otherwise you would want to do those things.
And there's a lot of people that I think do. And it's, I mean, people act on it every day. So,
well, that's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, and a lot of serial killers are deeply religious.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a fact. You know, I'm not saying that all religious people are bad either. I know a lot of people who are Christians or are Muslim or Jewish or whatever, mm-hmm. who are really good, decent people, and they don't use their religion as an excuse to discriminate or hate on people or be terrible people. You know, there are good people of other faiths, and there are good people of no faith at all.
Yep.
It's just a tragedy when faith is used as a tool for hate or to manipulate children into feeling that if they have feelings of being gay or transgender or something else, that they're going to be tortured forever.
Yeah.
Or that their God won't love them or whatever, because that is just so incredibly damaging to their psyche.
Yeah. Oh, trust me. That's my mom, like, found girls' clothing with me growing up when I was little. And gave me a big speech about going to hell and how all gay people go to hell. And that, it hit me so hard. Still to this day, it's the main reason I don't like religion is because of my mom's words.
And that's sad.
Yeah.
That's sad. You mentioned that you left home at, did you say 16?
16, yeah. Yeah, so basically how that all happened is I was depressed from a very, very, very early age. My little backstory, my dad actually taught Steve Jobs how to use electronics. And so Steve Jobs offered my dad a starting position at his brand new company, Apple, and my dad turned it down.
I bet he kicked himself for that.
Yeah, and then he lost his job and basically became a miserable person, and I was the youngest and the one at home, so he just took it out on me. So it developed my depression really early. My first suicide attempt was actually at 6 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that is young.
Yeah, rat poison and ice cream. Good combination.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah, but I hid it. So I didn't let anybody know. I tried to be as small as I was could possibly be. And it took until I was 15 till I finally had the courage to tell my mom that I had depression. She immediately started yelling at me and saying I have nothing to be depressed about. Ugh. And then when I asked for help, she threw me in a mental institution.
Wow.
And then once I got out of that, my dad basically said he can't live with a crazy person, and they threw me out. Well, they escorted me out. They like to say that they didn't throw me out, but it was pretty much I was being told or heard that they were talking about me and saying I needed to leave. So, I've been on my own since I was 16, was homeless for an entire year, living on the streets of San Francisco and San Jose.
Wow.
Yeah. Learned a lot about myself, though. I grew up really, really quick.
Yeah. My leaving home was not quite as brutal. I didn't wind up on the street, but and it was kind of like one of those things too, where my mom kind of freaked out. She was like, "If you can't live by my rules, then you can't live in my house." But her rules kept changing, and I didn't, you know, there was a lot of getting angry with me about stuff that wasn't a problem before, and you know, it was complicated.
Yep.
But I luckily didn't wind up on the street, but like you, when you are forced to grow up, when you are still a child. I mean, no 16-year-old deserves to be on the street.
Yeah.
That.
It's definitely, I mean, I see my kids now, like my second youngest is 13 now, teenager. But I think about, challenge. I think about what I was doing at 13, and I was doing drugs and was suicidal. I had already like attempted multiple times at that age, and he just innocently plays Minecraft. And it's just, it's so nice that like I've been able to provide a better home than my parents could provide me.
That is, that's truly amazing. That, I mean, whatever anybody, you know, questions about LGBTQ stuff or transgender stuff, being a good parent is what matters. Yep. And getting past what, you know, especially when you had parents that didn't raise you right or made you question your value as a person, or, you know, it is so impressive when somebody can come from that and still somehow become a decent parent.
Mm-hmm.
That is the mark of a good person. I don't know about you, but in raising my kids, one of what I drew on was, what would I need in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
How would I have wanted my parents to have reacted? Because I knew that wasn't how they didn't set a good model. So I had to approach it differently. Do you think you drew on some of that
exactly like that? I mean, I think I said at this at my father's funeral, that he actually taught me how to be a good parent, which was basically to do the exact opposite of what he did. And it's a joke, but at the same time, it's also true, because I did think about like how he would handle situations and how I would want a situation to be handled, just like you're saying. And it's interesting to see that how often it is just the opposite of what my dad would have done. But it is also helpful just to be like, I'm going that far away from his abuse that I'm doing the exact opposite. So maybe it's extreme. It was a big deal for me to make sure that my kids didn't feel unloved, because that's how I always felt. And that still haunts me to this day. One of my delusions from my schizophrenia is I think everybody hates me, like everybody. So I struggle with even my partner thinking that they hate me, just because my brain has told me everybody hates me for so long. And that's been my experience, is everybody leaves me or throws me away. So it's like hardwired into me. So I always struggle.
I think that's a commonality for any of us,
yeah,
who felt unloved by our parents. I think we struggle with that. For me, it was imposter syndrome,
mm-hmm.
Feeling like I'm a bad person pretending to be a good person.
Yeah.
And I've gotten better working through that.
Yeah.
I still fall on that of like, no, I'm, you know, I'm going to slip up, because deep down inside, I'm a terrible person, obviously. Yeah. Obviously, I'm awful, because otherwise my parents would have loved me, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
What parents don't love their kid? I must have been deeply defective.
Yeah.
That's what your mind says to you. It's a head game.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. And then dealing with schizophrenia on top of that. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. You were diagnosed in your 20s. Yeah. Now, for you, I don't know a lot about schizophrenia, mm-hmm. but I know that it can come with auditory and sometimes visual hallucinations. Yeah. And
delusions.
Was it that way for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've hallucinated pretty much most of my life. As long as I can remember, I saw cats.
Hmm.
So I just always saw cats just constantly. Like, it would be like if you looked at a corner of a room, like a bend around a room, and if you looked at it, you would see a cat just like run around the corner real quick. And that was constant. It doesn't happen anymore. I'm actually on like the best medication I've ever been on. Combo. But I had auditory hallucinations. I would struggle reading, because I had a voice in my head that would, in a mocking tone, they would recite what I was reading over me.
Huh.
So I would try to read and there'd be someone reading it over me a second off, but in a mocking.
Sort of like an echo.
Yeah. And so it was really hard to focus and I always struggled with reading just because the voices were always just so present.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And then I have a lot of delusions, but it's more of no one can actually debate if this is true or not, but just about us being in a simulation and all that stuff.
I am not schizophrenic. I like to have deep conversations about things. I am not one of those people who talks about the weather. And I have actually discussed with friends, well, what if schizophrenia is actually people that are seeing through the veil and there's something out there that we don't really know and they're picking up.
And you have no idea. I'm in a lot of schizophrenia support groups and the amount of people that bring this up and think that they are unlocking something because it does. When you hear
it, I'm sure it feels that way.
It does. It
must feel that way to you.
Yeah. Especially when you're deep into psychosis, when I'm like having an issue, an episode, it's like you're in another world. There's, yeah, nothing ends up making sense. Like,
and it must be incredibly frustrating to be in that place and have everybody else telling you that that's not how it is. And you can't get out of that loop or that vision.
Yeah. It's scary.
You can't believe them.
Really, for a lot of my life, it was like living in a waking nightmare. Because it was only until pretty much the last 2 years that I got on a medication dosage that has eliminated everything. I don't have any symptoms anymore, which is crazy. And it took me a while to even be okay with that because they were a part of me for so long that I didn't want to lose the voices. But it took me a good 3-4 months of not having them till I got used to it and was like, oh, this is nice.
It must have been weird. I know that you listened to my podcast about ADHD.
Yep.
and going on the ADHD meds. And it was really weird to take the medication for the first time because while I don't hear voices in my head, I have like multiple thoughts. Mm-hmm. All the time. Like I'm jumping from one thought to another idea. And it's like a constant, like a hum of a buzz of things going on.
Yeah.
It was weird for me to have it be like just
focused.
Calm.
Yeah.
It was like really, kind of strange to me. So I can, while it's not voices, I can kind of imagine that it must have taken an adjustment for you to come out of the way things had always been.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was 40 some odd years of dealing with it. And then to now, all of a sudden, like literally my life has been horrible up until I transitioned. It literally transitioning saved my life. I discovered happiness after transitioning. And it's like something that I just never realized that I never was happy. Like there was always just a lingering depression over everything. And it was just because I wasn't able to live who I truly was.
So you transitioned. And then after that and around that time, you met your current partner,
yep.
Melanie, right?
Yeah.
Now, Melanie, you said, considers themselves
genderqueer.
Themselves genderqueer. So they were assigned
yep.
female at birth?
Correct.
Okay. And how long have they been aware of their gender or what they're comfortable with?
Well, they're still confused about their gender, to be honest. That's why
they're in an in-between place.
Yeah, they use maybe. Genderqueer just because sometimes all pronouns work, sometimes no pronouns work. So it's really just a spectrum. And they actually got their PhD in queer studies, art history in the view of queer studies. So they're all, yeah, they live and breathe queerness. It's pretty great.
So is it because of your transition then that you met? Were you like studying and then you met them? It was just coincidence? How did that happen?
Well, Plenty of Fish. Or no, was it? It was one of those websites. Yeah, it was. I was getting divorced from my last wife, and I don't like to be alone. I don't do well being alone. I know that about myself. So yeah. I started dating and went through a whole bunch of bad dates. It's really hard to date when you're transgender. Insanely hard, especially when you're not really passing like I am. Yeah, so that always is a struggle. There was a lot of lesbians who just were very turfy and, yeah, said they weren't, but yeah, it turned out. But yeah, then I ran across Melanie's profile, and they were talking about the Last Unicorn movie and stuff like that from the 80s. Oh, I love that movie so much.
I played it at one of my birthday parties, of all things. I rented the video.
That's awesome.
Weird.
Yeah, and I found them, and I couldn't tell if they were female or male or what they were. They were... just interesting, and I like just started talking to him. We just hit it off, and pretty much from the moment we started talking, we haven't spent a day not talking to each other, and now we're living with each other, and we've never fought. It's been almost 5 years, and we've had no fights. We have the best communication ever, because I'm a communicator, so that was always the struggle with my last marriage, is that my ex did not like to communicate at all, did not like to talk through anything. I'm a big talker, and so was Melanie. So we both just, like, anytime any of us get a little upset about something, we're like, this kind of upset me. Oh, I'm so sorry. And then we work it out, and, oh, it's – I try to tell people this now, is that – because I went through so many bad relationships, that you can find, like, true, perfect fairy tale romance love. It actually does exist. It's hard to find because it took me until I was in my 40s, but it's still like...
That's great. I am in a similar situation too, of having two bad marriages, the second one worse than the first.
Yep.
And yeah, when you find somebody who you have a truly honest relationship with, where you're both trying to help the other... You both care about the feelings of the other. It's an amazing thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally didn't think that I could achieve that coming from the relationship that I'd had, the role models that I had had. But interestingly enough, and I don't know if this is the case for you, it was like somewhere in the back of my head, I had a vision of how it should work.
Yes. Yeah. Well,
it's like,
as long as I can remember, I always imagined a fairy tale romance. I always fantasized about just that, getting married and just living happily ever after, all the fairy tale wishes. And so I always believed that it was possible. I believed that if someone could write about it, then it had to exist.
So you just, was it one of those things where you just started, you know, once you started talking and communicating, it was just you knew it clicked and that was it?
Yeah, it was pretty instant. Yeah, we got along so good, and it's just so weird because it was every day my love for them would grow, and it's still to this day, every single day, my love still grows, and it baffles me just because I still look at them and I'm just have the butterflies and it hasn't gone away. And there's so many people, especially when we first started dating and I was like bragging about how amazing my relationship was. People were just like, oh, that goes away. This is the honeymoon phase. And it's like, we're on almost 5 years now and still going strong.
I had people say that to me too. And,
yeah.
And I was like, what is this honeymoon phase? Cause there wasn't in my first two marriages.
Yeah, exactly.
That didn't exist. What is this you say? And we're going on 7 years. And again, like you, it's like honeymoon phase.
Yeah. Well, the key is just being truthful. What I found is that both of my bad marriages, they were based off of them not really saying what they wanted. And if you just don't say what you want and you just hide it all, then you just get bitter and resentful. And that's how marriages just fall apart.
And possibly, too, you not knowing what you needed.
Yeah.
Or who you were.
Yeah.
How can you know what you want if you don't know who you are?
Yeah. Which is like, that was how my first marriage, well, she cheated on me, but it was really about she got married young, just like I did. We both were 19. And I understood why she wanted to leave me. It's just she wanted to still experience life, and she had gotten married so young. And I get that. I wasn't happy about the marriage ending, but I understood. It does make right. sense that people grow and people change. I mean, I'm so much different than who I was at 19.
Right. And how did it work with your children? Now, are your children living with you? Is it shared custody?
Shared.
Well, not the oldest, of course, because their mother passed.
Yeah, their mother passed, but they actually just moved out last week. So my 22-year-old moved out of the house. Yeah, so.
So how are you feeling about that? Are you?
It's hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's been good. I have my two little ones, so I have them. Me and my ex, we share custody, so it's usually 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. Yeah, so they're with me right now, so.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, they're just finishing up school.
And they get along well with Melanie then?
Everybody gets along great. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. Wonderful. And my kids are so easy. They're like the sweetest. I literally have no problems. They do all their chores whenever I ask them, and yeah, very, very well-behaved kids.
Well, you must have done some good parenting when they were little.
I hope so.
I find that that's the case. I've had some people that are like, my teenagers. And I was like, you know, yeah, there's some conflict. With my kids, it was like there was some conflict when they were teenagers because, you know, that's when they push away from mom. And there's a bit of a rebelliousness there. But at the same time, we'd always been honest and close and all of that. So it wasn't like, you know, rude, I hate you, or lying, and all of the things that you hear. Some people, it's like, well, no, we have an honest relationship. We have always communicated. We still communicate. You know, there's just a little more hiding out in our room. And with Kira, she was dealing with her own conflict, trying to figure out that she was transgender. So she didn't know exactly who she was at the time. So there was some pushing away there where I was like, okay, is this normal son pushing away from mom going on? I don't know, because this is my son, not my daughter. I don't know. And as it turned out, it was because I had a second daughter.
Yeah.
Who knew?
Yeah.
We figured that out, and you know, we communicate better now.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I mean, obviously, she got past the teenage phase. Once they kind of reach their 20s,
yeah,
things change.
Yeah, exactly.
Things change. They realize how hard it is to be an adult, and I think the balance shifts a little.
Yeah. That's what my daughter's off to realize, is how hard it is to be an adult, because they've been under my roof since the beginning, so.
Oh wow! Yeah, that'll be a big change.
Yeah.
But you know, at least they can come back to mom.
Yep.
With questions and all of that. I wanted to ask you a little bit about the mechanics of being transgender. I would assume you're on hormone therapy.
Yes.
Okay, so you do hormone therapy, and you mind me asking, what kind do you do? What?
So I'm on estrogen and spironolactone, which is a hormone blocker. So that the spironolactone kills my testosterone, so I don't produce any. The estrogen makes it so I have estrogen instead. And then I also take progesterone as a modifier, which a lot of the times is used for more mature trans women after you get through the initial puberty phase. You can introduce progesterone, and it was weird. It totally changed when I took it, because I went through the entire puberty phase of where I felt like a teenage girl. It was really interesting. I was just so hyper and so like amazed with everything being on hormones. And then when I took the progesterone, finally after a year of being on hormones, it leveled me out, and like I felt more like a woman at that point. So it was
Interesting.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I find the whole medical transition completely fascinating. Some of the way that it actually changes your body parts is fascinating.
You mean like the growing of breasts or the shrinking of other things?
Yeah, all that. Yeah, the growing of breasts is, I mean, I love my breasts, so. But the really interesting thing is what happens to the penis. Is it really just the shrinking down and really just becoming more like a clitoris? It behaves.
Really?
It behaves exactly like a clitoris behaves.
Interesting.
Yeah, their orgasming is completely different. I have a female orgasm now where I had a male orgasm before, and it's night and day different.
Really?
Yeah. That's and it all functions different because it doesn't get hard anymore. So that
I know that's not the case for some people.
For some people it's not. Yeah. For me, I'm for old.
That's how yours behaves. I don't think that as my daughter describes it, that's not how it is for her. But do you plan on getting surgically changed, or are you happy with how things function now?
I'm pretty happy with how things function. I would love to get the surgery. I would love to get bottom surgery. It would be amazing to like have my parts match what I feel. But the amount of you have to be out of the hospital or like on bed rest for a month, and I can't do that with my job. It's not plausible for me to just pause my life for a month when I'm the mother of multiple children and work full time and the main provider. I'm okay with, I've lived this long with the parts I have that I'm okay with it.
And there's some risk there too, to the surgery as well.
Yes.
I mean, right now you're at a place where you feel happy with your sexual function and how things work. And I know that it can risk losing that as well.
There
may be some things you gain, but you might also lose what you have. So
if I was younger, I would jump on the surgery. But the fact that I'm old and my priorities in life are my kids and just having a stable life, tending to my garden, the little things like
we're gardeners too.
Yeah, I just started.
It's great.
Yeah, this is the first year that I've been gardening, and I've been eating like snap peas and tomatoes and strawberries and
congratulations.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, we're very pleased with our snow peas as well.
Oh, sweet.
I was like, wow, they keep showing up. They come so fast.
Yeah, they do, right?
It's like, wait a minute, I picked them the day before yesterday. There's a whole bunch. This is awesome. Yeah, the weird things we are happy about. Although I won't say that this is just an age thing, because my daughter and her girlfriend came over and they're like, I wish we had a house so we could garden.
Yeah. Gardening's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's nice to grow your own food, and there's just something about being out in nature and having, you know, food come out of the dirt. It's a very peaceful thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would all be happier as a society if we all could experience that.
Yeah. My favorite thing with my new house is just we have a nice backyard with the garden and everything, and I just go out there with my acoustic guitar and just, like, and I work from home, so I will take breaks in the middle of the day and just go sit out in the grass and play guitar, and it's so soothing.
That's great. I envy you playing guitar. I wish that I could play guitar. I play saxophone. You can't sing along.
You can't sing along.
I play saxophone. You can't play. You can't sing along when you're the one playing.
It's a little harder. Yeah.
It's not a thing. I think bagpipes are probably the only wind instrument you can play and sing.
Can you
with.
Play and sing? Well, I oh yeah, I guess.
Yeah, well, because
yeah,
you fill
you have
it
the
up
air.
First.
Yeah, yeah.
Guitar would be nice.
Yeah.
So I would like to ask you a little bit, because you do follow some of the legislation that's been going on, and I follow some of it, but clearly as not as much as you. I know that Ron DeSantis is a piece of shit. You know, this don't say gay crap and all that's going on. So I was just wondering if you could share with the listeners some of the effects that some of it is already having on the community.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is that all this legislation is being, it's under the guise of we're trying to save children. And That first of all is a really scary notion, just because that is immediately saying that this behavior is dangerous to children, even though they're steering it in a way of saying we just want to protect children. Once they're 18, it's fine. But you can't criminalize something for a certain amount of years and then say all of a sudden, oh no, this is okay now, because it's not really okay if you've been saying the entire time that we're basically just as bad as pedophiles.
Yeah.
The legislation is being put there with this guise of save the children, and so many people then are in turn saying that, oh, well, trans people must be, yeah, like pedophiles or just bad people.
And I just want to interject here that when it comes to abuse of children, it is a fact that it is primarily heterosexual men.
Yes.
That abuse children of both sexes. That's just a fact. You can do the research if you want, but that is a fact. Gay people, transgender people have never been the main perpetrators of abuse on children, period, full stop.
Exactly. The big issue that I have with the current legislation with being focused on the kids is we've literally come not that far. We come a little far where it's now known that transgender people exist and that we are in this world. But
and always have been.
Yeah,
and
always have been.
Always yes. have been.
Yes.
In different societies, more openly so than others. Native American society, back in the time of the Romans and the Greeks.
Yeah.
You know, there was a time where they chose to force transgender people into the shadows, but this is not a new thing.
Exactly, yeah.
It's an always and forever thing that has existed.
And the problem is that one of our biggest things with the transgender community and the LGBT community as a whole is just suicide rates. And
yeah.
Transitioning early helps immensely. I know for me, if I could have transitioned early, that would have been a life changer. My whole life would have been completely different. But in my day, it was frowned upon. It just very against that. And that's what these bills are really trying to push. They're trying to push everything backwards and take all the steps that we've taken that we fought for and just erase it again.
It's going to lead to a lot of young people may end their life.
Yes.
When they see that society doesn't accept them and they can't live as they are.
It's almost guaranteed, especially you look at like the teenage years when you are hormonal and everything is so scary and new and frightening.
And everything is such an emergency in
yes.
that age. They can't see a few weeks out. Everything is now. To the teenage brain, and I've said this before, I'll say it again, our brain is not fully mature until we are 25 years old.
Yeah.
And when their brain is not mature, you know, every little thing is devastating. That boy that broke up with them, the girl that said something mean at a dance, whatever, everything is huge and overblown. Mm-hmm. And then to have the governor of your state saying this about you?
And that's the problem, is that with legislation is pointing towards children, but it's very obvious that the next direct step is adults and just outlawing it in general. And you actually see that, I forget if it's Ohio, I forgot which place, but made a law basically that you children can't transition. And if you lived in that state as a child under 18, even if you turn 19, if you are still residing in that state, you still cannot transition. So there's a whole bunch of extra stuff that they're putting on all these laws that protect children, but also make it so that once they're an adult, they still don't have the rights.
And I don't know what politician said this, but there was a politician who I heard recently, somebody basically said to her, if your child was transgender, you know, wouldn't you want them to get care, or is it okay if they commit suicide? She basically said, oh, I'd rather they committed suicide.
Yeah.
Like, are you freaking kidding me?
Well, and that's the scary part. And it goes back to what I said earlier about just the amount of people that just hate trans people just for the fact of them being trans. it's frightening that there's people that would rather their children die than be trans. And it's just a person existing under their correct gender.
Well, you know, there have always been these people who have this crazy belief that if their child is gay or transgender, they failed as a parent.
Yep.
No. If you reject your child because of who they are, then you are a failure as a parent.
Exactly.
If you would rather have your child dead than queer, transgender, gay, you are already a failure.
Yep.
You know what? I'm thrilled that I have two daughters because I have two children still.
Exactly.
I know. Sorry. Yeah. I know what the alternative was.
Yep. Exactly. And like, I had 14 suicide attempts in my entire life.
It's amazing you're here.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. It's so lucky that I was able to make it to now and actually see a different life, that I actually can be happy now and can look back and just be like, it was technically worth it because right now is really good.
And I'm sure your kids are very lucky.
Yeah.
And very happy that you failed.
Yeah, they like me around for some reason.
they're fortunate to have you.
Yeah.
These are trying times. The other thing that's going on is the people freaking out about drag story hour.
Yes. Yeah.
What is a drag queen reading a picture book? How is that threatening to people at all?
Well, the weird part about that especially is that the opposition is seeing it as like, this is putting sexualizing stuff in front of the kids. And there is nothing sex related about a drag queen reading a story. It's a guy
100%
dressed as a woman reading a story. The only way to put sex and make it sexual is if you input it. That's what they are doing. They are literally just seeing that, feeling some weird feelings probably, and then pointing at that for that being the problem, not for their own insecurities and their own internal emotionalness.
Yeah, they have some problems because, oh my God, I am seeing a guy as a woman and I have some feeling about that. Oh my gosh, not that.
Yeah.
And frankly, some of the states are trying to make these weird laws against being in drag.
Yes.
And they are not understanding how completely complicated they are making life with these laws. Let's go way back in time. In the Shakespeare time, there were no female actresses.
Yeah.
That wasn't a thing. So back in the time of Shakespeare, Juliet was played by a man because women didn't act because, I don't know, they associated with harlots or something. I don't know what weird warped thing they had that it wasn't a thing, but it wasn't. So the very first plays that had women in them, they weren't women. They were men dressed as women.
Yep.
And then if you move forward, you've got Monty Python.
Mm-hmm.
All of the old ladies and any Monty Python were not an old lady. It was one of the cast playing the old lady. Yeah. That was their thing. That was their shtick. We have movies where that's a huge part of the plot. Some Like It Hot, one of the most famous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the sexiest men dressed as women. It's a recurring theme. Then you've got Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got multiple plays that are still put on stage that have a subplot of a man dressing as a woman. Where do you draw the line?
Yeah.
Where it's like, no, I'm sorry. I can't even count the number of music festivals that I've gone to where men just choose to wear skirts.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're not gay or whatever. They're just like, I feel like wearing a skirt.
And
okay,
that's the scary thing about the legislation against drag story hours is because of just drag in general. Any laws being put into effect about that is just because it ends up going to, am I performing just going outside? Is it because I was born assigned male at birth? Like, if I go out just wearing my normal clothes, am I now performing a drag show?
And I am certain that some of those places who are making these laws are doing that on purpose to target people like yourself.
Exactly. And it's just another way of really targeting the entire culture itself. Mm-hmm. You can point towards children, you can point towards drag shows, you can point towards it all, but really it ends up just being intolerance and just hatred.
And that is the worst part of it.
Yeah.
Is just how ugly this is and how unnecessary. And also incredibly frustrating that in this country, you know, so many people are like, oh yeah, the land of the free.
Mm-hmm.
Free for who?
I mean, you bring up a good point that I always struggle with. I see the American flag now and I get a knee-jerk reaction. That's not good. I'm not proud to be an American. How can I be when half the nation doesn't want me to exist? So it's triggering now to see the American flag just because I associate it with people that want to lynch me. Because most of the people that I see waving the American flag, especially in the small town, definitely didn't take kindly to me.
Those who have taken up the rallying cry of patriotism are the least patriotic because they don't really believe in freedom.
Yes.
They believe in outlawing abortion and controlling what pregnant people do with their bodies and whether or not they are forced to carry a pregnancy. That's not freedom.
Yeah.
Now, if a guy wants to wear a dress, they can't. Let's stop them from doing that. Why?
Yeah.
Why shouldn't somebody have the freedom to wear a dress if they want to wear a dress? How does that affect another person personally? And that's what it comes down to. It's like, if what I am doing doesn't personally hurt you, then it is not your business.
Exactly.
What you do as a person, what you do with your partner, even if I had a problem with it, that's your business.
Yeah.
That's your thing. I'm not going to try to interfere with your life or walk up to you on the street and tell you, you know, I don't like your hairstyle. You shouldn't have that tattoo, whatever. That is your personal thing. Why do we have to get up in other people's businesses and make it ours? It doesn't affect us. And those personal choices, who a person is, we need to allow them to be that person and just move on with our lives. You do you. Everybody should have that right to do their own thing.
Yeah.
It isn't personally hurting anybody's children.
They think it is. They, for some reason.
How?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing. They can't even explain how this is somehow hurting their children. What? Their child might ask them uncomfortable questions that they might have to answer?
Pretty much.
I had an aunt and an uncle when I was little, George and Joe. And because I was little, I mean really little, like 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
And my aunt was a lifelong smoker and had a really raspy voice and short hair. And I couldn't tell which was which. She also had whiskers. So for the longest time, I didn't know if George was the uncle or Joe was the uncle. And it was Joe, short for Joanne, which I realized much later. But I wasn't sure who was who, and I found it a little confusing, but it didn't really matter to me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I was little. I was like, this is interesting, and I don't know how it works, but that's all right. They're giving me cookies. Everything's cool.
Yeah. And that's the thing is when you really look at like a children and how they really do respond to any of this stuff is they don't care. There's very rare chances that they do care. And if they do, it's because they have been pre-taught to care about this stuff.
Yeah. Somebody has made this an issue.
Yes.
Because children don't really care. And let's face it, there are old ladies with whiskers all the time.
Yeah. Actually, I was watching this TV show about queer history, and it was just talking about how up until the 19th century, everybody was just openly queer and it was fine. It wasn't really like a thing. They didn't even have a name for it. Men slept with men, and it wasn't that they were gay. They just, men, that's the thing that men do. And it was just so accepted that, but we had to put language to it and attach something to it to make it all of a sudden pointing that to be like, this is not a good thing.
There was a time when they made it a criminality, and then there was a weird time where it was like criminal for men to be gay, but it wasn't for women.
Yeah, and it's all
it's
control.
Very strange. It is. It is about controlling in such a disturbing way too. Because what are you controlling and why?
Yeah, yeah.
Why? At what point did someone decide that who other people like and what they do in the bedroom affected anybody else? At what point did this become a thing that that needed legislating? I guess the saddest part is I feel like over the course of my life, and I'm a little bit older than you. In fact, the Roe versus Wade happened the year after I was born. Mm. In all of my time of comprehension, it has been legal.
Yeah.
And over that time, I have watched LGBTQ community evolve and get extra letters and and you know, legalized gay marriage, and you know, we finally made it past the big scares with HIV, where it was a gay disease and everybody was like losing their minds. And to come to a place where, you know, I have had the honor of there was a young person who I knew, well, I knew sort of through their family, but also I was I ran an arts camp, and they transitioned while I got to witness this.
Oh, that's awesome.
I guess he was, I want to say 15, 16, probably 15, because I was having to give him rides. He wasn't driving yet.
Yeah.
But he first started taking his hormones at that time. And I remember him being like, so excited. Look, my voice is dropping. I'm so excited. This is so cool. And he shared that with me. And he was so excited about it.
That's awesome.
And then later he was actually, for a time, there was a time when, I left our hometown before my daughter did. She hadn't transitioned yet. And she wound up being his roommate. There were four young people living together. She was just 18, and she roomed with Sage. I don't know if you know Sage, actually.
No.
from the same hometown.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, yeah. So I got to witness Sage transition, and I was just so kind of honored to be able to to witness that. And so many people in that age range who are open to it, who are able to accept their peers, who are transitioning, who are able to question that for themselves. It really felt like this new era of, okay, we're becoming more enlightened. We're moving on to the next step. And then we hit this legislation and stuff that's going on right now. And it's devastating.
Yeah.
And we're moving backwards.
And I don't think a lot of people realize how much legislation is happening. I mean, it's hundreds of laws and things being put up. It's not like a few things here and there. Almost every day there's a new thing going on in a new state and a new city. And it's really scary just because it's never been fought this hard before. Even like through gay marriage, it was fought, but it still was able to be pushed through. This seems like there is going to be a war if they don't get their way, pretty much. I definitely feel a lot of strong stuff from reading comments online about how serious some people are on the opposite side. It's life and death to them as well, which is crazy because I don't know why it should be.
It's not affecting them personally, and it really isn't their lives. It is not their lives.
Yeah.
And one of the things that my daughter is going through right now, and I'm hoping she'll come on and discuss this further, but she is making plans to go to Florida to rescue two people that she cares about and bring them here to Portland. one of them is non-binary, the other one is transgender, and she is not being able to receive her hormone therapy because of all of this craziness going on with doctors there in Florida, people not feeling safe to see transgender people and give them the medical care that they have been receiving thus far. So she's not being able to get her medications.
Yeah.
So basically they're refugees leaving Florida.
That's amazing.
And I know that there are so many people in that situation who don't have a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, like especially young people whose parents are supportive, who have been getting them the therapy that they need, have been getting them the hormones mm-hmm. that they require, and their parents are begging to basically let their children live.
Yeah, yeah. And some states are criminalizing the parents for continuing health care for their children.
Those states are saying, we do not want to allow transgender therapy. No, it's okay with us if your child gives up.
Yeah.
And that's sick.
It is. It truly is. Yeah. It's sad. And that's why I see a lot of trans people just do struggle with even talking about it, just because it can get overwhelming. The odds are against us, but it's very important to still be loud and speak out about it. I really believe that, just because there's so many that just can't, that have their voices silenced.
Another thing that has really bothered me is some assholes, bigots, were harassing people at Target for having gay pride stuff.
Yeah.
And Target caved and removed their gay pride stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck, Target?
Yeah.
No.
Pretty much sealed the deal.
I'm a mom who went shopping at Target looking for that gay pride stuff because I wear it.
Yeah. That was a pivotal moment, honestly, for me. Target backing down, because we see it every year, corporate pride, where it's just like, gays, come spend your money. We'll put rainbow stuff on things for you. But for it to be that being happening, and then it to be pulled off the shelves because others didn't want to see it, is just, it's a slap in the face, honestly. I mean, it definitely makes me never want to shop at Target.
Yeah, I mean, they're saying, okay, the feelings of this group of bigots, we value that more than all of our LGBTQ shoppers and their parents and their allies.
Yeah, yeah.
They can't even say, okay, it's because our associates were being harassed, because they pulled it off their website too.
Yeah.
And that is the part that pisses me off the most. It's like, okay, you can maybe hide behind and say, oh, well, you know, in store, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you pulled it off the website?
Yeah.
Who's being harassed?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it just shows that bigotry wins.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's so harmful for how far we've come, just to see little things like this happen. I mean, it makes the young trans youth scared to even say anything, to even talk about it, just because they see this stuff, and it's frightening.
Yeah, it's upsetting. And, you know, I like to put it out there whenever I do this podcast, you know, if you are a transgender young person and your parents don't accept you, that's on them.
Mm-hmm.
They are the failures. They are the ones who have it wrong. You can blame them because it is on them. You deserve love. There are plenty of moms out there.
Yeah,
exactly. Who would love you exactly as you are. So I'm one of them.
Yeah.
There's another one here.
Yeah.
They're out there, and that is a failing on your parents' part if you're listening. So a couple of things I want to ask before we go. The first is, how can our listeners better support the transgender community and the LGBTQ community? And, you know, even a basic question, if they encounter a person that they suspect respect is transgender and they don't want to misgender them, but they don't want to be awkward, what is the best way to approach that?
Huh, yeah, I can answer that easily. The best thing to do is just say, what are your pronouns? Asking someone their pronouns is a completely acceptable thing. A lot of the time, a trans person will actually be very excited that they were asked what their pronouns were. We like to say our new pronouns when we have them.
Good.
Yeah. And then what was the first question?
How can allies best support
the
community?
The best thing is to speak up. Is when you hear someone being bigoted, stand up. Just say, I know trans people. I know gay people. I know whatever they're spouting off. Just make sure that they're not allowed to say that stuff unchecked. Because that's the problem. A lot of people get to just spout off a lot of nonsense, and no one's there to tell them that it's nonsense. And a lot of people will end up believing them because this person said it, so it must be true. But the more you can speak out and say, hey, that's not right, or you're wrong in what you're saying about this or what you read in the news, just speaking that out and being another voice, because we can't be everywhere at all times. Yeah, just
and be brave and speak up for the transgender people who are afraid to.
Yes.
Or aren't standing in the room.
Exactly.
That's a good starting place.
Yes, yeah.
Also, I wanted to ask you a little bit about your music. You said you released an album.
Yeah, I released an album. It's called Lennon's Mind. It's on Spotify and iTunes and YouTube and everywhere.
And all that.
Yeah.
Okay. Lennon's Mind?
Lennon's Mind. Yeah.
So Lennon is a chosen name.
Yes.
I was curious why you chose that name.
So I always loved the name Lennon. It, when I was going to have my final kid, Miles, if he would have been a girl, his name would have been Lennon. I'm a huge Beatles fan. John Lennon is, yeah, huge for me. I have a Beatles tattoo. And so it just always sat in my mind as such a beautiful name that was not really gender specific. It could be male, it could be female, it could be whatever, because it's really just the last name of a famous person. And it rang true with me. It actually came upon, not catfishing, but kind of catfishing. I made a fake profile to experience what it was like just to interact with people as a female. And instantly when I made the profile, I just named it Lennon Shay. And it stuck with me. That's my middle name is Shay. It came out naturally, like it was already my name. It was really weird.
When you did that profile and when you chose that name, was that about 5 years ago when you were transitioning? Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
I was just curious about that.
Yeah.
And so you shared a song with us, which to let the audience know, I'm going to use to play out the show so that you can hear the song. And it is called Sleeping Under Cars.
Yes.
And so the last thing I want to ask is if you could tell us a little bit about where that song comes from.
So that song comes from the fact that I was thrown out of the house at 16. It's about being a homeless youth. The reason it's called Sleeping Under Cars is because I discovered from sleeping in the street for a year that if you actually sleep under a broken down car, the aerodynamics of a car cause the wind to actually like move over the car, and it's actually a lot warmer underneath a broken down car.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's why I named it that. Yeah, my whole album is actually very personal, very, very emotional. It's all it's a little glimpse into my life.
So at different periods of your life or mostly from that period of your
life? All different periods of my life, yeah.
So it's kind of a journey.
Yes, for sure. Very emotional. Very, very emotional.
Yeah, and I've listened to that song. It's got a very haunting tune to it, as I told you. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. I appreciate your honesty. I hope that the audience learned some things, and it was really a pleasure. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
alone in this world for the first time. 16 years, it's such a shame. Sometimes you don't know fall, sometimes you just can't.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your support by giving the podcast a 5-star rating. And if you can spare the time, write a review. This helps put the podcast in front of more listeners. This is a one-woman show, so sometimes it takes me a little while to get everything done. Clips of this episode and the full episode will soon be available on my YouTube channel. Look me up under Esperanza Phoenix or Unpacking Life's Crazy. In the meantime, if you have questions, you can tweet them at UnpackingLC, the Unpacking Life's Crazy Twitter account. If you'd like to support what I do, go to buymeacoffee.com/ESPPHOENIX. If you'd like to support this podcast and receive an original piece of artwork, visit my Etsy shop, esperanzapaints.com. And last but not least, I'd like to thank Chelsea Wild, who composed the music for our podcast. She is a wonderful composer and songwriter. To hear more of her original works, go to minorbirds.bandcamp.com. Thank you again for listening to Unpacking Life's Crazy. Until next time, take care of yourself and the ones you love.